While we were marching through Georgia, everybody swing your honey, swing your high and low. The Alaman left for the old left, and around the ring you go. A grand old right to left, walk on your heel and toe. Promenade that pretty gal to Georgia.
We're going to start with an issue that comes up in a lot of podcast episodes, but it's important. When the Georgia colony was founded, it was much larger than it is now. It claimed land all the way to the Mississippi River. Eventually, some dishonest politicians would try to sell that western land to land speculators. This was known as the Yazoo land fraud. And those sales did not go through. In 1802, Georgia ceded those western lands to the United States, where they would eventually become the states of Alabama and Mississippi. For doing this, the state of Georgia received $1.25 million. Now, this wasn't an outright land sale. This was basically paying Georgia for giving up the claim to those western lands. Out in the western part of Georgia, there were Native American tribes. Some of them had signed treaties with the United States government, just basically saying that they could live out there in perpetuity. Some had signed treaties that had granted them ownership of the land they lived on. It would be up to the federal government to negotiate with those tribes and gain title to those lands. In a way, it's like buying a piece of property twice. We would pay Georgia not to claim that piece of property and then pay the Native Americans for the actual land. There were many people in Georgia and in other states that wanted to move into that new land, but they were not allowed to until the federal government settled its business with the Native Americans. And in this, the seeds for future conflicts over states' rights were being sown. A few Georgia governors wanted to just open the gates and bring settlers into Cherokee and Creek lands despite the treaties and promises that had come from Washington. More than one Georgia county is named after a governor who encouraged or allowed settlement despite a standing treaty with the United States. And this is the story of one of them. This is Moving Through Georgia, and today it's George Troop and the Native American lands. In 1822, the Creek mostly occupied a narrow strip of land between the Chattahoochee and Flint rivers. The Cherokee were concentrated up in the northwest. For the Native Americans, this was the end of land concessions. They had nothing left to give away. The residents of the rest of Georgia felt the same way. The only remaining step to them was to relocate the Creek and Cherokee out of state to reservations out west. The Georgia Creeks, or sometimes they're called the Lower Creeks, occupied their strip of land in the western part of the state, while a majority, and these were the Upper or Big Creeks, were in Alabama. The group in Georgia numbered about 8,500, and they were under the leadership of William McIntosh. I know that's not the name you'd expect for a Native American chief. His father had been a colonel in the British Army, and his mother was a full-blooded Creek. McIntosh was of the belief that his people would be better off leaving Georgia and accepting a reservation west of the Mississippi. He may have truly believed that this was what was best for his people, or maybe he thought they should take what land they could get before they were just simply expelled by force. This, however, was not the opinion of the larger group of Creeks in Alabama. Under Creek law, no individual tribe or group could sell or give land away without the unanimous permission of the entire Creek Nation. The leadership of the entire Creek Nation and some agents of the United States government met together to try to settle this issue at Broken Arrow, Alabama in 1824. McIntosh made the case for moving his people out west to no effect. The larger nation wouldn't budge. Later in 1824, after that conference, George Troop was elected governor. He was from an aristocratic English family and had graduated from Princeton University. As governor, his first priority was to clear out the Native Americans and open all of Georgia for settlement. he contacted President Monroe demanding that the federal government work faster in gaining the Native American land. Monroe replied that the government was working to extinguish, as they said, Native American title to the land, but it would refuse to speed up the process by using force. A year later, and this is 1825, President Monroe brought together the leaders of the Creek Nation to discuss the purchase of all remaining Creek land in Georgia. Among the delegates was Colonel John Crowell, the U.S. agent to the Creek. Crowell was against the sale and was quietly and subtly trying to turn the Creeks against it. The terms of the agreement promised an equal amount of land out west of equal or better quality. $5 million would be paid to the Georgia Creek and they would have a year and a half to relocate. Some leaders of the Alabama Creek spoke passionately against the treaty, then left. They knew that under the rules, a decision couldn't be formalized if the major leaders weren't in attendance. They were basically ending the conference. But after they left, McIntosh went ahead and signed the agreement. Crowell, the U.S. agent, had a reputation for being sneaky, and this comes out when the treaty was sent to Washington to be confirmed. Crowell sent a note to the president that the treaty was invalid, that those who had signed it were minor chiefs or had no official capacity to do so. He warned that acting on that agreement would lead to war. Nobody cared. The agreement, and later we will call this the first treaty, was unanimously approved by Congress and signed by President Monroe. When the Upper Creek learned that the Lower Creek had signed the treaty after they left the conference, they were furious and declared that the treaty was invalid under Creek law. McIntosh, who was technically a traitor for giving land away without unanimous approval, was threatened with death. To make things worse, McIntosh granted permission for the Georgia lands to be surveyed in preparation for his tribe's departure. One night, 160 Creek warriors crept up on McIntosh's home and set it on fire. McIntosh was killed, then the warriors killed two more men who had signed the treaty. Then they went home to Alabama carrying McIntosh's scalp. Agents of the federal government investigated and immediately came into conflict with Governor Troup. Troup contended that the treaty was valid and that the land survey would continue, even if it incited more violence. Troup wanted that land surveyed and ready to divide into lots by the very last day the Creek would be allowed to occupy it. When the president, who was now John Quincy Adams, ordered that the survey needed to wait, Troup responded that stopping the survey he had promised to a lot of potential settlers would result in the speedy destruction of all state rights and in the ultimate destruction of the Union itself. Nothing was more important to Troup than opening that land for settlement as soon as possible. Investigators from the federal government eventually concluded that the treaty was invalid. It hadn't been approved by the entire Creek Nation. And yes, because the agreement was invalid, it was wrong for McIntosh to allow surveyors onto the land. They warned that implementing that treaty and marching surveyors over the land would result in bloodshed. President Adams consulted with the Creek leadership and also concluded that the treaty was invalid. With all this going on, the entire Creek Nation began to see the writing on the wall. They knew they were going to lose that land in Georgia one way or another, so it was time to negotiate a valid treaty with the entire nation. This would be legal under Creek law. It was more or less the same agreement with two differences. The first is that the Creek would have 2 years to move out instead of a year and a half, and the Creek wouldn't entirely move out of Georgia. They would retain a tract of about 100,000 acres. Governor Troup was informed that there was a new legal agreement with the Creek and that there would be no surveying for 2 years. That agreement that he had made with McIntosh was invalid. Troup countered that the previous treaty was legal. It was approved by the Congress and was signed by the President. Forget that it wasn't legal from the Creek point of view. He announced that land surveys would begin immediately, and they did. Washington and the Creeks stood by and allowed the surveyors to work, and they all held their breath when the surveyors reached that plot of land that had been set aside for the Creeks to keep. Sure enough, the surveyors mapped out that land as if the second treaty had never happened. Some of the surveyors were eventually chased off the land, and the Creek leadership marched to Washington yet again to demand an explanation. President Adams sent a messenger to the Capitol in Milledgeville to inform Governor Troup that if the surveys weren't stopped, the federal government would use force to protect the rights of the Creek. To this, the governor said, "Understand distinctly that I will resist by force of arms to the utmost any military attack that the government of the United States may make on the territory, the people, or the sovereignty of Georgia. You who are constitutionally bound to protect us from invaders are yourselves the invaders. You have espoused the rights of savages against the rights of Georgia." And that's what it really came down to, isn't it? There were people who wanted that land, and the only thing standing in their way was a bunch of Native Americans. Adams and the federal government didn't want to go to war with Georgia. The president wrote a letter basically conceding that the governor was right, that states' rights were very important, etc. To the president, the changes of the second treaty, that extra 6 months to move and that 100,000-acre tract, they were not worth the possibility of having to enforce this agreement by sending troops to Georgia. So what eventually ended up happening was a sort of compromise, a way that all groups could save face. The Creek did leave Georgia. It took them 2 years, but they also did not try to hold on to that 100,000-acre plot of land. Moving Through Georgia is a Georgia history podcast that mostly focuses on Northeast Georgia, but wanders around a little bit. If you have any questions or comments, I'd love to hear from you at movingthroughgeorgia@gmail.com. And if you would like to share the history of your state with other people, please consider giving us 5 stars on whatever podcast app you listen on. I'm also preparing for a live show. This is going to be in downtown Clarksville at Sweet Southern Creations. It's on Washington Avenue right across from the theater. Starting at 3 o'clock, I'm going to give about an hour of stories about true crime here in Habersham. If you've ever done a ghost tour with me, these are very different stories. I'm going to lean more towards true crime, although I might throw in one ghost story. All right, it's a great coffee shop, Sweet Southern Creations on Washington Avenue, April 13th at 3 o'clock. Hope to see you there. In 1827, Governor Troup stepped down after serving 2 two-year terms. He planned to retire, but he heard a rumor that the legislature had planned to appoint him to a 6-year term as a senator. He tried to fight it, but eventually gave in and moved to Washington. He resigned after a few years due to bad health and died in 1856. He was a Georgia governor who had stood against the federal government on states' rights, or at least the rights of states to overlook or override decisions of the federal government. And as I've said, the seeds were sown. Next would come the Compromise of 1850, then the Nullification Crisis, and then eventually secession. A grand old right left fork on your heel and toe. Promenade that pretty gal to Georgia. That's all.